You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com, 710 Sports app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. Go find the show. I got plenty of new reviews. I'll read you today. I got like five new reviews.
Hey, you were mentioning a couple the other day that we never got to.
Well, now we got even more. People just keep flooding them in. I appreciate it. Thank you. Still a 4.6, though. We can't quite get to that 4.7 mark. It's elusive. What can I tell you? Maybe for every nice review, you got like some troll out there sliding in a little one star just to mess with us. I don't know.
Creating fake accounts.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Nice troll.
Really just what we need. Thank you. Most important thing in my life. And there you are out there screwing it all up.
The most important
most important thing.
Was it not?
I love it.
Oh, I mean, other than my kids, obviously. The kids and why and all that. Yes, of course the kids. Yeah. Second most important thing after my kids. I get it.
Oh, over the last 2 days, the amount of times that you've mentioned kids and how happy you are about it is
you know, it's so funny, too. You know, I really shouldn't. I should stop doing that. When I was younger, when the kids were younger, really, it was an easy joke to just make fun of how awful it was having them around because, you know, it was true. And most parents of really young kids don't say that, even though I think they feel it. But they don't say it because of, you know, society and rules, and you don't want to sound like an awful person. But I don't know. You get on the radio and you can pretty much say whatever you want. There's no consequences to this. So you just sort of talk. And the next thing you know, you've sort of convinced everybody. And it's not like entirely untrue that like it's difficult having young kids. It is difficult having young kids. But at some point, like my kids stopped being so difficult and now they're actually fairly easy. And so I kind of keep making the jokes as if it's true, but I should probably stop because it's not really true anymore. I was thinking yesterday, so I picked my daughter Cecily up. So Cecily is 7, second grade. She's my younger daughter. When she was younger, dear God, I mean, she really was challenging. She was a tough, tough little kid. And so I picked her up yesterday at her after school program, and she comes running out, super excited, backpack like bobbing all over the place, hitting her in the head, and her big overstuffed coat. She gives me this huge hug, which is as a dad like. That's about as good as it gets, seriously. Like, when your kid comes out and gives you a hug when they see you, it's awesome. And when my younger daughter was younger, or my older daughter, Avery, when she was younger, she'd do it all the time. Huge hugs, right? She'd see me as the best. And you're like, okay, this is what makes all the other hours of the day, which are terrible, awesome, like, worth it, because you get these hugs from your daughter. But Cecily's not like that. We picked her up, and she'd be like, again, if she could use the middle finger, she'd have used it. Like, she didn't know what that meant and didn't have, like, the full control of her fingers enough to be able to do it. But that was sort of her default idea of the world of, like, hey, Cecily, great to see you. You're like, oh, okay, maybe not. I'm going to once again carry you boneless out the door because you're throwing a tantrum about whatever. And so I was telling her, I was like, oh, it's so nice to get a hug. When you were younger, you wouldn't do that. And she was like, why not? I'm like, dude, I don't know. Why don't you tell me? You were the one who was like this for years, and you get nothing out of it. So anyway, it's nice to see them grow up, and eventually they give you hugs. And I'm sure there's parents of teenagers out there right now who are like, you better enjoy that now, Dad, because those are going away. So,
you won't be cool anymore in a few years.
Yeah, Avery already told me that hugs aren't cool at school. Well, first she said that, and then I was able to convince her that hugs were still cool at school, but kiss is not cool. Kisses are out.
Got it.
And then I picked her and her friend up the other day. No hug. I was like, yeah.
It's funny seeing the parallel. My nieces are like the same age as your daughter. So
yeah.
It's funny seeing almost the exact same aura about them. The younger one is just like, she embodies the middle finger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you think so, huh? Let me tell you. So, I don't know. Maybe that will shift when they become teenagers or something. I guess I can only kind of hope. I do have some actual sports stuff to talk to you guys about today. Let's see. A couple different things. I have a tweet to react to. I have something from the afternoon show I wanted to talk about. I'll start with this tweet just because I saw it quickly yesterday. Maura pointed this out to me. And then I printed it out. So speaking of being a dad, I printed it out so small that I can barely read the darn words on it. Yeah, let me get out the readers here so I can. Oh, there you go. This is what I wrote. Okay. Mike, use a larger font. That's what I apparently wrote here. This started with a tweet from a guy named Nate who says, what are some ways the Titans could orchestrate a Tannehill trade for, say, I don't know, Russell Wilson? If it's just that easy. Hey, how do I get my hands on Russell Wilson? I've seen that a post-June 1st trade would actually clear up $29 million in cap space for Tennessee. Wilson's deal also seems favorable moving forward. All right, so he sends this to Joel Corey, right, who does a lot of cap stuff, and Joel's great. So Joel writes back, well, that's correct, assuming Russell Wilson would waive his no-trade clause for the Titans. The Seahawks would want Ryan Tannehill, well, this is losing me a little bit here, and wouldn't insist on the Titans eating a significant part of the $29 million 2022 salary as a part of the deal. All right, so I got some issues here that I just kind of wanted to address. First of all, why would the Seahawks want Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, that's a really, that's the best question.
I don't quite understand.
I think he might just be saying that in the way of, if you're trading your quarterback, you're going to want one back. I don't know if it's necessarily, because the guy's asking about the Titans. I'm not sure Corey's saying that that's the guy they'd be gunning for.
So I understand Nate's point of view here. If I were the Titans, I would want Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson would be the championship piece that the Titans need. Watching that team, knowing how they tried to build it first around Russell Wilson wannabe Marcus Mariota, and then tried to build it around Russell Wilson wannabe Ryan Tannehill, he would be good because he's not a wannabe. He's actually Russell Wilson. If they were to take Russell and put him on the Titans, they'd win the Super Bowl. They'd beat the Chiefs. They'd beat the Bills. They'd win the Super Bowl. They'd be the best team in the AFC. That's my opinion. Strongly held that with Derrick Henry, that offensive line, Jeffrey Simmons, that defense, Mike Vrabel as the coach, etc., they would win the Super Bowl.
He's got his DK type and A.J. Brown.
It's perfect for him. It's all set up. That offense he would be fantastic in, and, you know, given the ball, can you imagine him and Derrick Henry as a 1-2 punch together? Plus, what's the other dude they've got over there? That dude's good too. The other running back who filled in for Henry,
Deontay Foreman.
Dude, he's good. Like, that's a good team with a good offensive line, a good everything. Put Russell Wilson on that team, they win the Super Bowl. Here's the thing: if you're the Seahawks, rather than trading Russell Wilson to the Titans for Ryan Tannehill and, like, you know, some lint out of Mike Vrabel's pants pocket, why don't you just build a damn team like the Titans? How about that? That seems, I'm not saying easier, but more sensible. Just build a damn team like the Titans have. I've been saying this for like 2 or 3 years, by the way. Remember when the Titans came in and they kicked their tail a couple years ago? Maybe it was actually in Tennessee. But you remember that game? It was the same year that they got beat by Jacksonville and they just dominated. I just remember thinking, like, this is what the Seahawks want. They want to look like Tennessee. They had Jack Conklin and a couple other guys on that offensive line, and they just mauled the heck out of the Seahawks. They just mauled them. Just beat them up physically, dominated them. It must have been 3 years ago, right? Because they played them again, or 4 years ago, because they played them again this year. They're going to play them every 4 years. So it was 4 years ago. They lost to them. They lost to Jacksonville, and they got physically beat up in both of those games. I remember Jacksonville. It was not unlike the Debo run the other day. They had like a 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 late in the game, and they just flat out outran the Seahawks because they were just more physical than them with Leonard Fournette. You're like, sheesh, this is what it's become for the great Legion of Boom? Getting run on 3rd and long for a first down late in a game? P.U. So don't trade Russell Wilson to Tennessee for Ryan Tannehill. That's dumb. Trade Russell Wilson. Don't trade Russell Wilson, and instead build a team like the Titans have.
So breaking that down, they already have DK's teammate in. They have DK and his teammate in college, AJ Brown. And I would honestly say the Seahawks have a deeper receiving core. Julio Jones really did nothing.
Oh yeah, I don't care about their receivers. I mean, other than AJ Brown, whatever. Build a defense like Tennessee
has. That's what I'm wanting.
Build a mentality like Tennessee has.
I don't think Derrick Henry's grow on trees. They do need to figure out some way to have a running game even when guys get hurt. Like Deontay Foreman stepping in.
Absolutely.
It didn't work out that way with Alex Collins this year. I would argue that part of that is they do need to get the offensive line figured out.
They do. And I'm not saying that it's like one step away from being Tennessee. But the Tennessee thing starts with mentality. They have a mentality of what they want to be, a clear-held vision of the kind of physical football team they want to be. They're not trying to outthink the room. They're not trying to compromise. Yeah, they throw the ball when they have to, and they have wide receivers. It's not like having a run-first mentality means you're like, oh, yeah, let's take our backup left guard and put him out there on the edge because we don't bother to draft wide receivers. It's about your focus. It's about making sure you hit on the things that you're supposed to be great at. And Tennessee did that. And the Seahawks haven't. And that's kind of where you're at right now. So that's a little appreciate the tweet from Nate, and appreciate that he wants the Seahawks to just take Ryan Tannehill. Oh, and maybe eat some of Russell Wilson's money to just give him to Tennessee. But maybe that's a different way the Seahawks could go with something like that. All right. I love some of the stuff that's in the news today. It's a really cool story out of Minnesota. We'll tell you about it, what it means. Coming up next, everything you need to know on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, rolling along here, excuse me, this morning on the Mike Salk Show. Matt Hasselbeck, join me coming up in 15 minutes, and then I got lots to react to today. I got friends on the show today, which is kind of fun. Jesse Jones will join us at 8 o'clock this morning of Cairo 7 TV, and of course, ex-fullback at Montana State. Love talking sports with Jesse. And then Jason Churchill will join us at 8:30. We'll talk a little baseball. Right now, let's give you everything you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
You know, when Quandre Diggs got hurt in the last game of the season, there were plenty of people offering their support, right? Not just because of the gruesome injury, but because he was on the verge of free agency and they were worried that his value would be significantly impacted. Well, I totally agree in the sympathy. I've never worried about his value, not for a second. I think it'll remain fairly consistent with what it would have been before the injury. And apparently, so does Diggs. He told John Boyle he would like to return to the team, but only at the right price. He said yesterday, "No question I want to be back. If we can make it work and it works out for both sides, and I feel fairly compensated knowing that I'm a two-time Pro Bowler, received all Pro votes, and one of the best, if not the best, safety in the NFL, I have to be compensated as well. And I feel like I did everything the right way to be compensated as well. If it works out and they say they want to do it, let's get it done." Here's my prediction. He'll be franchise tagged while they work on a longer deal. They've got the room, no other obvious candidates. He may not get the long-term deal he wants yet, but I don't think we're going to have... I don't think that'll have anything to do with the injury. Pete Carroll, obviously a huge fan.
He's been a really steady force, you know. He's been obvious. His hitting, his alley play in the running game, as good as it gets. And he's a real ball hawk. He's just a really complete football player, and he's a very important leader and the guy back there, you know, calling shots and directing traffic and all that. So he's doing everything.
He's a good alley player. You don't hear that every day. I like that. NFL teams starting to fill some of their open positions. This morning, it was the Broncos hiring Green Bay offense coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. Folks already speculating that Denver is the most likely landing spot for Aaron Rodgers, so I would think those rumors will get cranked up a notch now. As for GMs, Bears make it official with Ryan Poles. He comes from the Kansas City system, and that's cool, but I'm much more curious about the direction Minnesota's gone. The Vikings hired a guy named Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, who's been in the game for just under 10 years, but he comes from the world of investment analysis. Holds econ degrees from Princeton and Stanford, and will bring, I would say, a different kind of mind to the job. And I love this kind of thinking. Get a really smart, successful person into a position of management and see if they can look at a familiar problem in a new way. Maybe some of those skills translate. I don't know if it'll work. Nobody does, but there's no proven way to hire a GM, so thinking beyond just finding a capable scout seems like something worth trying. Also, the Browns are going to get comp picks after the third round of each of the next two drafts as a reward for developing a minority candidate who moves into a GM job. The league started that program last year in order to increase the number of minority candidates who are qualified for jobs like this one. Seems a whole lot easier to do that than trading down every year in order to get extra third and fourth round picks.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, in the wake of some progress between the union and the league this week in baseball, I've been asked how I think it'll play out. And I guess my answer shifted a little bit in the last week or so. First of all, I'm much more positive about the chances for the season to start on time. The two sides have just been giving each other signals that they're willing to reach a deal, and obviously that's a good thing. I also feel like the reason for that is that the players are realizing that they just don't have the power they used to have. That the baseball players union, once one of the more powerful in sports, just doesn't have the juice it once did. And I believe the reason is that when it was formed in the mid-70s, the economics of the game were different, and the wealth of the owners was considerably lower in comparison. Even in the 90s, this was true. But with the amount of money now in the game and the power of the owners and TV deals, I think they're more similar to the NFL players who've continually rolled over and taken worse deals each time. And much like the football players, they appear to be compromising on the economic issues that would actually help them the most, but that they won't actually win. and winning small concessions like a draft lottery that'll have about as much impact as voluntary OTAs do in the NFL. So that's where we're at right now in baseball.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Still some time before the hockey trade deadline, but as the halfway point of the season is here, Kraken GM Ron Francis was speaking with ESPN's Linda Cohn, said that he'll be listening to all kinds of offers on virtually every one of his players. So if you're of the belief that the expansion draft was a bit of a disappointment, this is his next opportunity to remake the roster and prepare it for the future. Team just finished off its homestand. They are now back out on the road. They'll be in Pittsburgh tonight. Busy night in the NBA. Suns just keep on winning. Get 43 from Devin Booker to win over the Jazz. Ja Morant with 41 for the Grizz. They top the Spurs. Nuggets beat the Nets. DeMar DeRozan and the Bulls over the Raptors. Miami beats New York, and Cleveland takes down Milwaukee. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour, all morning long, here on the Mike Salk Show.
All right, I was promised a review. Are we going to get a review or what?
Oh, you want a review? Okay, yeah, here. Hold on. I got one from DCE. This is a short one for you.
Okay. It
says, and this is a nice one. Change the OT rules. From DT. Change the OT rules is the subject. Best sports radio show Seattle has had in a long time. Salk officially won me over with his passionate arguments to change the NFL overtime rules. Don't back down, Salk. Never back down. For the love of all that is right and fair, the NFL overtime rules must change. There you go. You like that one?
Pretty selective choices on these ones that you want to share that are really supporting
just
the passionate point.
All right, I'll give you another one. Hold on, I got another one. This one's from Nolan in the 360. Thank you, Nolan. We appreciate it. Love this show. Hi, guys. Just want to let y'all know. Did they say y'all in the 360? Is that a thing?
Depends.
I mean, it's South. Is it that far south?
No, it's not just South.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to let y'all know that I love waking up in the mornings for school and listening to the show. It's very entertaining, and I just like all the different viewpoints from different people with Seattle sports and sports in general. Big fan of all my Seattle teams. Thank you, Mike, Maura, and it says Justin. I was hoping it was going to say the Bengal, but it does
the
say
Bengal.
Or the hillbilly, depending on which.
Thank you, Mike Moore.
When it started with y'all, I was like, this could go that way.
And the other hillbilly from Montana. Appreciate you showing up every day. No, thank you. We appreciate it. If you want to go to Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, but I think more people probably on Apple, you can download the show, have it come straight to your phone every day. Pretty easy way to listen to it. And yeah, we wouldn't mind a 5-star review or two because we're trying to get to 4.7. On the ranking out of 5. It is out of 5, by the way. I've confirmed that. It's not like 4.7 out of 10. 4.7 out of 5. So that's what we're trying to get to.
Are we going to have like a party or something if we
that's right. Oh, we need to set a goal.
What should
be an incentive.
What do you
here?
Want to do? You want to like, think about this a little bit. What kind of party?
Donuts,
because you're on a diet, so it's going
to well, by the time we get
options.
To 4.7, I'm sure I'll be willing to break that sucker. I mean, it's not like the diet lasts forever, let's be clear. All right, we'll talk to Matt Hasselbeck next while we think of what we want to do for a big old party when we finally get to 4.7. Maybe we should actually throw the party for the people that
yeah,
got us there rather
saying.
Than for us.
Incentivize
I mean, like, what do
people.
We do? Yeah, it's not our party. It's their party. We're going to buy pizza for all of them? That seems incredibly expensive. We're going to want to partner with somebody on that before we just spend the money. Let's make some calls around here, see if Zeke's or Pagliacci or somebody wants to partner before we get in there.
Give them a promo code 4.7.
Exactly.
Yeah, good idea.
All right, Matt Hasselbeck coming up next and some really, of course, great insight into where the playoff teams are at and how they maybe differ from the Seahawks. Stick around. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, presented by Infinity of Bellevue and Linwood. Seahawks legend Matt Hasselbeck takes you inside the Seahawks and the NFL for a full hour, exclusively on the Mike Salk Show.
Yep, it's time for the Matt Hasselbeck Hour here on 710 ESPN Seattle with Matt Hasselbeck. Hello, sir. How we doing?
What's up? How we doing? I'm excited to be with you guys.
Well, yeah, it was a heck of a weekend. If last weekend was in any way disappointing wildcard weekend, I mean, it's 3 days later, and I feel like the buzz is not really worn off for anybody from just how incredible the divisional weekend of games was.
So good. Like, amazing. And, you know, and I also think, like, the opportunity to watch these games while people are on social media, live posting, live, you know, talking back and forth to each other, using memes, telling jokes, being critical, being complimentary. It just kind of sort of adds to the experience, you know, and so I think that adds to kind of like the overall game experience. And then these quarterbacks are playing just so incredible, some of them. So, yeah, really fun.
So let's talk through them a little bit. I mean, you know, specifically the game everybody watched Sunday night with Mahomes and Josh Allen. What is setting those guys apart? And I know you'll probably want to put Joe Burrow into that category as well.
Well, Joe Burrow didn't play in that game, but yeah, I just think that the quarterbacks today are so much better than the quarterbacks that came before them. Like they're just some of the stuff that they're doing now, and I'm not really talking about like the arm strength and the athleticism and the size and all that stuff. Like, sure, that stuff is probably very true, but just all the different stuff they're doing at the line of scrimmage, the way that these offenses have evolved. Now they think like, hey, there's 13 seconds left. Yeah, we can do this. Like, there's enough time to do, you know, the stuff that they're doing. So I'm just really impressed. I mean, I obviously loved watching quarterback play, and those two guys, kind of what they put on that night was just, it was jaw dropping. It really was.
Yeah, it was remarkable. I was telling these guys that, you know, we made picks on Friday, and just out of competition, it's not like I had a real rooting interest in any of these games, but because I had a pick, now all of a sudden I had a dog in the fight, and I was rooting for all the four picks I made like, you know, it was my kids playing in the game, which was stupid. But, like, yeah. I had picked Mahomes and I picked the Chiefs, so I was, like, screaming and swearing. It was really embarrassing, quite frankly. Good thing you weren't around. But the watching them go back and forth, you ever seen anything like 13 seconds, a drive in 13 seconds?
Well, no, it almost felt like a basketball game to me in a way. And I just really am just impressed globally with the NFL. Like, the state of the NFL is so strong right now in football, and just like the talent level and the ratings, and just a game like that. You know, we picked those games, you know, also on our Sunday Countdown show. And honestly, like, you sit there, you go back and forth and back and forth. You don't know. It's almost like you're guessing half the time. It's an educated guess, but you're sort of guessing who's going to end up with the ball last. And it's funny, like, when the game ends, whatever team you did not pick comes at you so hard on social media. Like, see, I told you, you're an idiot right. for thinking that. And it's like, hold up. Like, this game was, I was 13 seconds away from being right. Like, I mean, and by the way, I'm not rooting against. I'm just sort of, I don't know. I saw what Joe Burrow did to the Kansas City Chiefs in week 17. So why wouldn't I think that Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen could do that? Like,
and they did.
You know, how? Yeah. Well, with the exception of Stephon Diggs, you know, they kind of shut him down. But still, Josh Allen was like, yeah, it's okay. I'll find Gabe Davis for 200 yards and four touchdowns. Like, oh, what? Who's that? It was really, really fun to watch. Very exciting.
What do you make of the overtime rule?
Yeah, listen, that's an interesting one. I've sat in those competition committees meetings when I was, you know, an executive committee member with the NFLPA. And those conversations are very different than what you hear on talk radio and what you hear on TV. Like, basically, those conversations are very data driven with medical personnel. And they're things like, hey, we really care about health and safety. Like, here's the amount of plays players play typically in a game. And now with hurry up offense and all this other kind of stuff, guys are actually playing more plays in a shorter amount of time. And so it's hardest on the bigger guys usually. And if the bigger guy goes out, now your quarterbacks are in danger, and now the product is in danger. And so it's a lot of time it's a health and safety thing. So I've heard things where people just want to play an extra quarter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I mean, again, these receivers and DBs, they're more like sprinters than they are like marathoners. So that doesn't jive with them very well. So I think like the health and safety of it in terms of like how many plays are played mm-hmm. is going to be the main factor that when this thing ends up getting voted on, you know, how they'll vote.
I can understand that. But the flip side of it is it doesn't feel right at all. It doesn't feel even. There are so many rules in the NFL that have now pushed towards the offensive side of the ball and made it easier to move the ball offensively in the playoffs, especially. I don't really care too much about the regular season, but in the playoffs, you've got the best quarterbacks in the game who are incredible and are the best quarterbacks because of their ability to score in those 2 minute situations. It just doesn't seem right to give them the ball and say to the other team, sorry, you have a defense, you're supposed to stop them. They're not going to stop them. And they haven't now to the tune of 10 times. The team that's won the coin toss has won the game.
Yeah, and
out of 11, I should say 10 out of 11.
Yeah, right. So 10-1 is the winning team under the new rules. Well, they changed the rule. I mean, they changed the rule for exactly what you're talking about.
I know.
They changed the rule to make it more difficult to give the defense an advantage. So
what would you do?
I mean, listen, the best, honestly, you're not going to like my answer, but the best thing that I have heard came from my old teammate Pat McAfee. And essentially, like in hockey, when overtime is over, say overtime ends in a tie, right? so this doesn't really solve your overtime question, except for maybe you play the whole, you know, the whole thing out. He's sort of recommending a form of a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So again, I'll screw this up because he knows the exactly what he said better than me, but it's essentially you take both kickers and there's no pass rush. There's no nothing. They just walk out there and there's a tee. And like, you know, you can imagine, like, people are going crazy. The TV shots is everybody on the sidelines, like, you know, on a knee praying, all this stuff. And the guy kicks it from, who knows, the 20.
Right.
And then the other guy, 20. Now we go back 25, 25, 30, yeah. 30. We go back to, if we got to kick 65-yard field goals off a tee, we're kicking 65-yard field goals off a tee. And just the drama, like the I don't know, it just reminds me of the World Cup or, you know, NHL or something like that. But
yeah, you're right. I don't like it. I would like that in the regular season, but not in the postseason. I
no,
can
in the regular season. In the regular season, you're just going to end in a tie.
Which is fine, too. I would be fine with that. I mean, I grew up watching hockey. I don't mind games that end in a tie.
Well, here's the other part of the Pat McAfee thing. If the kickers like do it all, now it's got to be the non-kicker. Bring out the non. And then here's how it ends. Ready? Here's how it ends. If tied after that, you pick a fan and another fan, and the fans decide. How do you like that?
That will definitely end in a tie because the fans aren't doing anything. You'll appreciate that. You may remember the name Eddie Andelman, who when we were growing up in Boston was like sort of the dean of sports radio there. When I was a kid, my dad called him to complain about overtime rules, and Eddie, who had a real thick Boston accent, says, you know, I always thought that each team should have like 53 players and one acha. And at the end of the game, like both teams would put out a target and the achas would come out and whoever was closest, they'd get the ball to start overtime. Wow. That was his big solution.
He was ahead of his time.
Here's my answer. How about this?
Well, real quick on the overtime thing, because I've heard from people, you know, mostly kids on TikTok about the overtime in my Al Harris interception.
Yes.
Like in that game, we had the ball. And we went, you know, we went down. We actually fumbled. They reviewed it. They gave us back the ball. We punted.
Sure.
You know, that defense stopped us mm-hmm. once. Then Brett Favre has the ball, and he's running, coming down, and like, oh, shoot, we just lost the game. Our defense stopped them. We got another opportunity, and that was the drive that I ended up throwing that interception. So, like, the defense is allowed to make plays.
Sure.
Now, I know 10-1 doesn't really sound like defenses are making plays, but
the defenses are. It's just, but sometimes they don't, and then it's not fair to the other side. But why doesn't your defense have to make plays? Why does my team have to be the only defense to make plays? I think that's kind of the crux of it. I would suggest this. If everything you said was true about the amount of time that the guys are out on the field, leave the overtime rules the same. But in the playoffs, instead of giving the ball to the winner of a coin toss, give it to the higher seed. Just say what you've done in the regular season is worth something, and so because of it, we're going to give you the ball in overtime, and you get the advantage that you've earned, rather than you get the advantage that you've lucked into.
They're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. I've sat in those meetings. I just don't think that they love the approach of a 0-0 situation once the game starts. But it makes for great conversation, and the way it comes up is someone will nominate an idea and then it goes to the floor and then people vote on it. So it's pretty fascinating.
Why were you there?
How that gets done. They at the combine they kind of bring in the NFLPA and they kick around, and maybe some like 1 year they were talking about getting rid of the kickoffs or changing the kickoff rules, and instead of just doing it by themselves, they like to hear from, they brought in like all the special teams coaches. I remember when they were came up with like the targeting idea, they brought in maybe five or six free and strong safeties in the NFL, and they said, okay, what do you think? What do you think about this rule? And it was great dialogue. I remember sitting in a meeting with, you know, Mike Tomlin was in there, and really he was the strongest voice and the voice that I appreciated the most. And he sat up and he was like, hey DBs, listen, where we're going as an NFL, as a league, kind of trying to be leaders in this area of health and safety, this is no longer a play that we as coaches expect you to make as a safety. Like, that's just going to be a catch now. Like, you don't launch to this guy's head with your eyes closed. That's just going to be a catch. And that's how we got to coach to it, and that's how you're going to have to play to it. And it was the message was received so much better hearing from a coach and key leader players hearing it from the coach rather than, you know, some person who's a GM.
It's so funny, Matt, when you tell a story like that. I can't help but bring it back, not to keep harping on the overtime thing, but that's the reason why the overtime rules need to be different than they were when you were playing. because of all of those changes they've made to benefit the offense. Hey, yeah. Now that's just a catch. Well, yeah, the defense is allowed to make plays, but not as many as they used to, right? The offense, yeah. Now that gets to just be a catch, and it's not an expectation.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And I agree the OT rules are changing. I'm just talking about how they're going to get changed. It's going to be first and foremost a health and safety thing about how many plays we're playing. Some of these teams are playing on short weeks, you know, all of it.
Hey, one of the conversations we've been having here at the station, Jake and I have kind of been going back and forth, Jake Heaps, about, you know, how teams are building around their franchise quarterbacks. When you look at whether it's Mahomes or Allen or Burrow or any of these guys that are either left or impressed us this past week, how do you think they've built around the individual strengths of those quarterbacks?
Well, not one way. I mean, shoot, Kansas City traded up to get Patrick Mahomes. They had a team that was already built. You know, Alex Smith was that quarterback, mm-hmm. ended up having the best quarterback rating in the NFL that year, Mahomes' rookie year, where he didn't even play, and was the starter in the Pro Bowl. And they just, you know, he plopped into a really good team and just and never looked back. Joe Burrow, sort of the opposite. Like they invested nothing into the offensive line his rookie year, and they said, hey man, like, we want you to do what Peyton Manning did and Troy Aikman did. We want you to just come out here and learn on the fly, and hopefully you stay healthy. And he didn't. You know, he ended the year with a major, you know, catastrophic knee surgery, and came back from that, and that injury. You know, they had such a bad year, they were in position to go ahead and draft Ja'Marr Chase, but they still got to fix the offensive line. I mean, that offensive line has given up more sacks than any offensive line in all of football. And here, 9 sacks last week, and yet here they are in the AFC Championship game. So it's different. There's not like one way to do it, but the key thing is having the right guy under center.
Well, and I think that's why we've been arguing about it a little bit here, is what is the best way to quote-unquote build around Russell Wilson? Is it about getting him weaponry? Is it about protecting him with an offensive line? Is it about coming back and having the killer defense like they did during the Legion of Boom years? You know, what do you look to when you try to figure out the best roster to build around a specific quarterback?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. The irony of the question, though, is that what the Seahawks did is what everyone tried to copy for years. Mm-hmm. They built the team. They built this great defense. They built the team, and then they started a rookie quarterback, and they had a guy in a rookie deal play really good football and take them to the Super Bowl. And then all around the league, it was like, well, how do you get to the Super Bowl? How do you win the Super Bowl? And it's, well, you need to get a quarterback on his rookie deal, like Seattle did, because then you can spend money on pass rushers and DBs and like all the stuff that other stuff that costs a lot of money. You know, so it's sort of ironic now that, you know, Seattle's in kind of another phase of this. Like, how do you get back to where you were when you don't have a quarterback on a rookie deal?
Yeah, it's a good point. And none of these quarterbacks are now, right? All four that are left are, other than Joe Burrow, the other three, right, are all not on their rookie deals. They're all getting paid. Stafford's getting big money and all of that. Garoppolo got paid.
Right.
I mean, they've all gotten paid at this point other than
Burrow.
Yeah, so
there's one guy in a rookie deal, and that's Joe Burrow. But, like, I think the you know, you can't just magically create a Patrick Mahomes or, you know, a guy like that. But San Francisco is interesting, because it's not like they're getting elite quarterback play out of their quarterback. They're getting good quarterback play. But where they're unbelievable is what they've done recently on defense has been outstanding. They didn't give up a touchdown to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers last week. Their special teams are great, and they run the heck out of the ball. And they have playmakers. You know, Debo Samuel's a playmaker. They have Kittle, who's a playmaker. And so, like, to me, like, when I think about what Pete Carroll is always talking about, what he wants to be as a team, he's really describing what the San Francisco 49ers have done here of late, in terms of they've just sort of found ways to dominate, primarily you know, in the areas like I talked about with defense and run game, and then making big plays in the passing game when they're there.
Talking to Matt Hasselbeck, as we do on Wednesdays for the Matt Hasselbeck Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. There are also four offensive coaches left. Of the four head coaches, all four of them come from the offensive side of things. Do you think that's coincidence? Do you think that's the future? What do you make of that?
Yeah, I usually try not to get too wrapped up in like the tendencies as we go through the playoffs. I think the best way to look at those things is to look at the Super Bowl and then look back the last few years of it. Because I just remember like there was a few times where we were talking about, you know, whether it was divisional round or even wild card round, where we were talking about like, oh, it's the age of the mobile quarterback. It's the age of the mobile quarterback. And like, I respect the heck out of the mobile quarterback. I really do. I really do. But if you go and look at Super Bowl matchups for like years and years and years, it's always like a Tom Brady, and even going back to like Nick Foles and Matt Ryan, and like Patrick Mahomes is definitely a mobile quarterback. But you know, people sleep on the fact that he's such a rhythm passer from inside the pocket as well. Like, he gets the ball out of his hands very, very quickly, typically. You know, and so, like, I think the best thing to look at trend-wise, it would be very easy to say, hey, offensive coaches are in the championship game. There's 9 head coaching opportunities. We need to go look for offensive guys. Yeah, well, newsflash, the best NFL coach of all time is a defensive head coach in Bill Belichick. The best college football coach of all time is a defensive head coach in Nick Saban. So I don't know that I would I don't know that I have a great answer for you though, other than I like to have, I guess, maybe more of a narrow focus in more context than just what's going on.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think it's probably more coincidence. And my guess is, if you went through it, there are more offensive coaches in the NFL in general, which might lead to some of that. I know you obviously played for Holmgren for a long time, was an offensive guy. Did you have a head coach who came from the defensive side of things at some point in your career?
Yeah. I mean, I had two in Seattle. Two in Seattle would be Jim Mora
and Pete
Carroll.
And Pete, yes,
You know, so those would be two. Yeah, I mean,
How does that play itself out in the building week to week?
Definitely see things through the lens of the, you know, of a defensive-minded person. Like, I remember on Thursdays we would practice. It was like turnover drill. And literally in quarterback individual, we would practice jumping on fumbles. It was like, because this is turnover day, we need to practice jumping on fumbles. And it was like, whoa, I've never even heard of this before. Like, this is a thing? Like, I didn't know. But I'm not saying it wasn't important.
Is that because an offensive head coach would assume you're never going to fumble?
Yeah, it's like, hey, we don't fumble. Right. No fumbles around here. You know, ball security is job security. Like, there's no fumbling. Like, we don't even want to talk about it, you know, or we want to talk about it, we don't want to do it.
Right, like you jinx it by even mentioning it.
Yeah, or like even in scout team, if you have an offensive head coach, he's going to say, hey, complete as many passes as you can against our first team defense. Like, that's the goal of scout team. And then with a defensive head coach, it'd be like, hey, I want you to throw as many interceptions in this drill to our starting defense as possible. I want to get them used to catching the ball and catching tips and overthrows and all those kinds of things.
What do you say that? Hey, let's turn this over to the backup. I don't want to start throwing a bunch of picks. Let somebody else do that.
No, they are saying that to the back.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying the mindset of
right.
You know, at least people that I've been around, offensive coaches and defensive coaches. Hey, this is a defensive drill. We're going to do it for the defense. If we throw in 10 plays, 10 interceptions, hey, this is a great practice for the defense. And you know, in fairness to like the offensive stuff, Mike Holmgren would, you know, if he's going to call a screen pass, he would make sure at practice, he would make sure our scout team defense was rush, a four-man rush, rushing up the field, not breaking up the pass. He wanted it to be perfect so that the offensive line and the running back got the rhythm and the timing of the screen pass. Mm-hmm. The wide receivers got the rhythm and the timing of the screen pass. No one's downfield illegally. No one's blocking beforehand. And so that when the bullets are flying in a real game, that we all have this muscle memory of what it's supposed to be like, and you adjust if you have to. And so it's just a different like mindset of, I think, how you want to practice. Not saying that one is right and one is wrong, but there's definitely a difference that you feel as a player.
Hey, this is a little out of left field, but we had a conversation here over the last couple of days about legacy. And as a guy who played as long as you did and had the kind of success that you did, especially here, did you think about your legacy and what that word might mean along the way?
No, I think you're so focused on the task at hand that there's no real time for that. The only time I ever remember thinking about that is when I was leaving, mm-hmm. when I left, essentially. My last conversation with the team, with John Schneider and Pete Carroll, it was kind of, hey, we're going to go in a different direction here. You know, like it's got to end at some point. We feel like this is a good time to clean break. The NFL lockout was ending. So I had to find a new team. in there were two teams that I was choosing between, and one was a rival of the Seahawks, and then one was totally not. And so it was like, like maybe that's the first time I ever, I don't know if legacy is even the right word, but like, you know, how do I want things to
How do you want to be remembered
going
here?
Forward? You know what I mean? I don't know if it was, I don't know. I didn't want to feel like a traitor, but yeah, that, I think that was the very first time that I ever felt like I ever thought that far down the line.
You mentioned that a few years or a few weeks ago, right? You your other option was in San Francisco, right? You just felt like you couldn't go do it. Did you almost think back and put yourself in a fan's perspective and think about being a kid when favorite players ended up leaving to go to an enemy team or something? Did you try to think of it from their perspective?
You know, ironically, the situation I thought of was Steve Hutchinson, my good friend and my teammate, who was like, you know, Mr. Seahawk to me, was everything you were looking for in a teammate. And the way that, you know, he left with poison pill and all that, it was like, oh man, that was a tough one for us. You know, it was tough to lose him as a player and as a friend, and he was a great player and a great teammate. But, you know, I think that was ironically the thing that I thought of the most. And so now I'm so glad that it's like all good with him and the Seahawks and everything. And yeah, but that's who I thought of.
I wondered if you went back to your child. Like, for me, if I were in that spot, I feel like I would have thought back on, we were just talking about Roger Clemens and what it felt like. I mean, he was my hero as a kid. To have him not just leave, but then go to teams in the same division and eventually the rival, you know, I went from loving him to hating him as a fan. And I you know, if I were in your spot, I wonder if I would kind of try to think that way.
I was a huge Roger Clemens fan growing up. Like, that was my guy. Yeah. And I think he went to the Blue Jays, though. So, like, it's maybe a great example. Like, if he had gone to the Yankees, that would have been a real problem.
He did eventually, and it was awful. And I hated him for it.
And listen, he did when I was much, much older.
Oh, so then you were more mature.
No, it was a little bit of a problem for me. Listen, I even remember when I was in Seattle, there were some great guys on the Mariners at the time, and I was buddies with guys like Raul Labañez. And like when he went to the Yankees, I was like, and he's like one of the greatest guys I've ever known.
Couldn't
and
be I'm that like, great if he decided to wear the Yankee pinstripes. I think we can all agree.
Saying,
how great
that's
a guy is
saying.
He really? All right.
You know, so you know, I'm an adult and I can't even get over it.
Who
so,
can blame you? That was Matt Hasselbeck showing off his bitter side, which I think is important to know. I'm glad to know Matt's got a little bitterness in him, and it's not just, you know, everybody loves Matt. So it's nice to see that there's still some bitterness inside him, especially reserved for Roger Clemens, because, you know.
I remember feeling the same way about that when Tino went to New York, and I was very upset.
Now, he was traded there, or did he sign there as a free agent?
I was too little to know.
Oh, so you didn't care.
I was just upset.
Yeah, I get that. That's frustrating. But if he's traded there, it's not really his fault. I have to go back and look at that. I don't remember whether he was traded to the Yankees or if he went there willingly. Going to the Yankees willingly is obviously a sin that nobody should be forgiven of. You get drafted there.
Yeah, he was traded.
Yeah, see, that's not really his fault. You got traded there. It's not like he asked to go there. Somebody who willingly signs with the Yankees, now you know that's somebody you don't want to be around.
We got anymore. Russ Davis and Sterling Hitchcock.
Oh, what a great deal. That sounds so fantastic. Good move. Nice job, Mariners.
I wish I never looked that up.
All right, coming up next, I want to react to something Matt said there about where Seattle is at compared to where they were. Teams obviously looked at the model here and said, we can build that too. So what kind of situation does it leave the Seahawks in? We will discuss next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.